Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, from PrideOfDetroit.com is Eric Schlitt. Eric, has been a quiet last week and a half for the Lions. There's been some under-the-radar signing. Not under-the-radar. One signing that made everybody quite angry. And then there's a couple other small signings. In total, it's three small signings.
Believe it or not, that one signing that made a lot of people angry, my social media had the exact opposite. It was that most of them were happy and excited for a chance for redemption. And so
remember him playing against the run?
it was very interesting. And I have a theory on why it was more positive that I think we'll get to that in a minute though.
All right. But there is the news that a lot of people we're all going to look forward to in this fall is the Lions have become the latest participant in the HBO Hard Knocks series.
Yeah.
This first go around for the Lions, I believe it's the first go around for any of the NFC North teams. They haven't followed the Packers or the Vikings or the Bears so far.
I believe you're right.
We're the tip of that spear.
I think they're the oldest franchise as well.
To participate? Yeah, I'm looking at the list right now. Ravens, technically an expansion squad, quote-unquote, after they moved from Cleveland. Cowboys, 1960. Chiefs.
Raiders.
AFL, 1960. Bengals, 68, I think. Jets, Dolphins, Bengals, Falcons, all those teams from the 60s. The Texans from 2002. The Rams are from the 30s, but the Lions are still older than they are.
Yeah.
Buccaneers. Raiders, yeah, Lions are the oldest franchise to participate in Hard Knocks. So that's really not a feather in your cap because of the rules that surround whether you are on Hard Knocks or not. There's like the three main rules is number one, you can't have a new head coach, and the Detroit Lions fit into that. They have Dan Campbell in year two. Correct. Rule two, and I might not be doing the rules in order.
So, no, go ahead.
Rule two was you couldn't. In either of the previous 2 years, you don't make the playoffs.
Yeah. 2 years without playoffs.
2 years without playoffs. And the third rule.
You haven't been on it before.
Oh, okay. The Cowboys have been on it a couple of times.
Within the last 10 years, I think what it was too. All if you haven't been on it within the last 10 years, there were only three teams eligible this year.
Only three teams that can be forced, right?
Correct.
If say the Buccaneers might be, you know what? We want to be on Hard Knocks. We want to show off Tom Brady. They would probably shoot to the front of the line.
That happened in 2020 when the Rams,
the both Los Angeles teams, right?
Yeah. I do think though that the Lions make a very interesting, storyline, and they have a lot of storylines amongst the team, amongst the staff. There's a lot of different avenues that HBO can go after in order to try and make the season entertaining, because I know like nationally there's going to be a lot of people that are like, the Lions are, they haven't been successful in a while and they're boring, but like realistically this team has a lot of interesting parts to it. Like first of all, Dan Campbell is a walking one-liner, right? Right. If he comes out and like starts out with the quips, like, they're going to have at the beginning of the first episode or whatever, they're going to have him doing something silly, but like, and that's what people are going to look at. But then like, if you watch, you're going to get to know him and know that there's more to it. Right. So
it's a cartoon character.
Well, that's what a lot of people think, right? But he does go beyond that. And I think that's what
he's got depth.
Well, more than people give him credit.
He's a leading man, certainly. If there ever was one.
But then like you've got big personalities on the coaching staff. Deuce Staley's got a big personality. Aubrey Pleasant, Randall L. Aaron Glenn is just a head coach in waiting, and he should be able to showcase those attributes as well. Right. So like, there's a lot of interesting storylines that you can come across with the coaching staff, a lot of big personalities that should be, fun, even if it's just little snippets and little tiny segments there's enough interesting guys that I think it's they're going to get to have a lot of material to work with. And then the players, there's a, I mean, look, you start off with Jamal Williams because he is an entertainment center as it is. And then you've got, you know, Penei Sewell, who is this, you know, mammoth man who is excitable and just energetic. And but then he's got a football family where his brother's in the draft, and he's got another brother in the expansion league that just started. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And then he's got another one in college, and then they just started a charity. So there's like all these neat things that these neat storylines that go into, you know, what the Lions I think can do. And I think it's going to be fun. And, you know, you get to shine Detroit in a very positive light. You get to have, you know, just a different angle of what this team can be and what it's about, and you know, why a lot of people are so optimistic that a lot of pieces are a lot of the right pieces are being put in place. So, you know, it could be, I don't foresee it being a disaster. Of course, any television show can go the wrong way, right? But I think it's a really good opportunity to put the team, organization, and city all in a very positive light.
Well, all of what you mentioned there is interesting. The big thing with Campbell, we'll see with Campbell, because yeah, there is that idea that there's some meat behind, not a meathead, but there's some substance behind Campbell, even though he comes off a certain way.
Yeah.
We'll see. Like, Jeff Fisher, who's now the coach of our beloved Michigan Panthers, he was on Hard Knocks. Like, I partially thought, like, oh, maybe they just do that so, like, you can't see anything they're thinking. But there was never anything on his computer. There wasn't whiteboards with writing on them. There wasn't binders anywhere. He just had an office, you know. And you kind of got the idea. It's like, yeah, he doesn't really put too much into this, you know. and maybe we'll see inside of Campbell's office, we'll see the same things. Of course, I don't know how much you really can gather out of it. Mm-hmm. You'll see how he interacts with the players, and I'm sure that'll come off positively.
Yeah, I think so.
The HBO cameras and everybody watching. You mentioned that people would be bored of the idea of the Lions because they're the Lions, and maybe that's true. I don't know. I would think most casual football fans would be pretty interested in seeing Campbell.
Yeah.
Day to day. And even though, yeah, there's no Trayvon Diggs to talk to, you know, or to follow, or you know, like as he ascends to stardom. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is. I don't know. But
there's some storylines. I mean, you have the Akuda comeback. You have the Aquara potential comeback. Frank Ragnow potentially coming back. I mean, even Hockenson missed the end of the year. So you got a lot of big name guys that are potentially coming back. You've got Tracy Walker returning, who, as you mentioned, the bond, right?
Yeah.
And so like with the bond with Campbell, it makes an interesting storyline. I wrote this in my article, but like even there's a human side to Tracy Walker.
That's the first thing that popped to my mind, the Ahmaud Arbery story. So I'm sure they'll touch on that.
Absolutely. Because I mean, that's a humanizing story, and that's part of what the show's about, right? It's taking these, you know, football players who you know, their faces or, you know, their names, but you just look, you know, in a lot of ways, people look at these as like numbers, you know, or like characters. Right.
And it's
true. And there's real people. And I think that'll be
just rooting for laundry.
Well, I think it'll be a good dose of reality, I think, for the national team, but I think also like locally, like I think it'll be a good, people will fall in love with, you know, players because of something they did well, or you know, like when the Raiders were on, Cabinda was somebody that they absolutely loved, and he was a featured story part in that season. And when he got cut, they were like, they had a whole dramatic scene over it, and then that ended with him picking up a phone call that he's going to Detroit. And so now it's a natural progression just to go right back into that, right? And so I'm sure they'll talk about that. Look, Jared Goff and Brockers left the team that And then that team won a Super Bowl. Like, that's going to be a storyline to talk about, right? Like, I mean, there's so many unique little things that I think they can create stories out of that make this an appealing team to be able to put on television. And I don't think they'll be like stretching. Like, there was a couple of seasons where they were stretching for information and stretching for material. I don't think they'll have that problem here.
Now, I'm realizing, you know, you lay all that out there, and all of it I would agree with. I'm just realizing how shallow I am when it comes to like watching Hard Knocks. For me, it's just the sights and the sounds of football. Yeah.
No, it's
crazy. Because it's that time of year.
Yeah.
You know, like the weather's a certain way. We're coming out of summer, but it's still summer. You know, the air has a certain smell, and HBO does do a pretty good job of like kind of encapsulating that, like during practices. It just like everything that goes on at a practice, you know.
And then they have the games, you know, three of those episodes will have games attached to them.
I know. And that's the part I think they do the worst.
But it's interesting because you'll get to see, in the last episode, you'll get to see the thought process with moving on from players, and
easiest part of the coach's job.
And at the beginning, you'll get to learn about, you know, the personalities. And look, I'll tell you what, when those cameras are going to be on 24 hours a day during training camp, and personally, I will be there for as much of it as I possibly can.
Well, that's right. We might be able to see Eric on TV.
But I'm also going to come home and consume that as well, because I'm going to want to know that much more. Like, it's like you said, it is an exciting time of the year. It tends to be when fans, Lions fans specifically, get very excited about the team.
So it's the high point of the year, traditionally.
Well, you could argue the draft.
Can't say I'm wrong,
well, right?
Well, yeah.
but like, I can tell you, like, some of my most read articles consistently on a year-to-year basis are observation articles. Like, I was at training camp, fan X wasn't able to go, and they want to find out what happened. And, you know, I write an article, and people tend to enjoy that from what I gather. And I get more reads, I get more comments, I get more questions. That time of the year, it seems to be really exciting. And people are getting amped up, and they want to absorb as much information as possible. And so, look, there's going to be a lot of attention. There's going to be a lot of fun stuff, and the cameras will be going. And I'll have my hair done. I'll try and wear nice outfits. I won't wear what I would normally wear to a training camp. You know,
be in a full suit. Way to make this all about you, by the way.
Oh no, the end part here. Yeah, absolutely. No, but from the fan perspective, I think this is a part of the year that the fans really enjoy, and this is just going to add to an already exciting part. And so I'm very excited for it to happen, and both professionally and selfishly. And so it'll be interesting to see how the whole dynamic plays out.
Yeah, so we got that to look forward to. And it'll get us a lot more focused on the Lions as the season ramps up, at least for us that don't get to see them every day in training camp. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an extra nugget that, you know, we're not used to, and most franchises aren't used to. So that'll be interesting. I look forward to the Hard Knocks season. All right. That's it for that. The other big news that came early in the week was the 2024 draft is coming to Detroit. They announced it, and it's going to be in late April, so it's who knows what we're going to get weather-wise, you know.
Right.
You think that, but they can't. Just that's how the league year just works. Like, you think they move it a couple of weeks later. Just a better shot at weather.
Yeah. Look, it's spring break and there's snow on the ground at a couple points, you know what I mean?
Third winter. This week,
yeah. Right. It's but they're hoping to put it outside of Campus Marsh, and that
Campus Marsh is all the way down to Hart Plaza, which is an easy walk.
Yeah. And if they can't, if they're worried about the weather, they're talking about having like the Fox Theater as an alternative, or maybe the Little Caesars Arena, right?
Not Huntington Place, or what we all know as Cobo Hall.
I don't think they listed that.
Convention Center.
Okay. I don't think they listed that as an option. I know that they had talked about the Little Caesars Arena and Fox Theater, and I thought they had another one. I don't know if they would do it at Ford Field, to be honest. It would be interesting. It'd be interesting to do it there.
Where would they be announcing this? So what?
Go ahead.
Now I'm trying to think back to the Nashville draft. Mm-hmm. Where were they announcing the picks from? Would they be announcing them in the Fox Theater?
No. Well, if they have to go into the Fox Theater, it would be just like
when they were in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But if they can do it outside, Chicago did it outside. Nashville did it outside. Did Cleveland do it outside too?
I can't remember.
Yeah. They got a nice setup right down there for an outside venue if they get good weather. And so it could be super fun. But yeah, they would announce right on the stage, right out in the middle of the open area there. And it's central enough. Like you said, it's not like people are going to be able to get down there. From a personal standpoint, I'm not going to be able to go.
No, you can't go
because I have to write. Right. Yeah,
there's now, no way you could be down there.
If for whatever reason, I don't know if they'll have it's very possible they set up a media area, like a tent or something like that for us. I'm not exactly sure how it works because I haven't been to a draft because I've always had to write, but it's possible, I guess. But if they didn't have a pick on day one, if they traded their first pick if they traded their 2024 first round pick to move up in 2023, right, to get a quarterback, let's say, right?
Or they trade the 2024 first round pick to get somebody else's quarterback.
Right. Or whatever. Right. Yeah. And they don't have a pick on day one. That would be appealing for me to go down. Now, it wouldn't be appealing to everyone. Is that something does that appeal to you to go down to something like that? Or is that not something that excites you?
That's a good question. Yeah. I bet if it wasn't in Detroit, I bet there would be some appeal for me to go to be there. Right. It's going to be jam packed and I don't mind it. That's not an issue for me though. I don't have an issue with crowds. I know a lot of people do, and I can see why people would want to stay away for that reason. I don't know if the weather's I'm getting old now, the weather's crummy, if I was 24, it's like, oh yeah, who cares? Let's go down there, but now it's like, if the weather's bad, it might rain, and I've been, you over the years, not so much in the last few years, cause you've been working. I'm used to just sitting around and being drilled into watching the draft on TV.
Yeah. We've done that for a while.
So I would be out of my element. I know that's the one thing, that's why I don't like being in person for a ton of football games, because it's not about the game anymore. It wouldn't be about the draft anymore. I'll be down there with people. We'll be chatting the whole time. Mm-hmm. We'll have no idea what's going on. And, you're going to look up at the board. You think it's the third pick. It's already the 17th pick. There have been all these trades. You have no idea what's happened, So if you want to really follow what's going on, you're going to rather watch it at home than actually be there. Mm-hmm. But should people go? Yeah, it'd probably be cool. They'll probably set up a bunch of ancillary stuff to do, games and interactive stuff. And they'd probably make it fun for a family. They'd probably make it fun for people who want to go down there and party, as if it were opening day. So,
well, if they set it up like they did this
twist, there could be Tigers game the same day or the same 3 days, but they probably will send them on the road for that weekend. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say if they set it up like the Super Bowl, they'll probably have stuff leading up the week, that week leading up, right?
It'd be a little festival. Right. That would be a cool thing to go. It's something to do, something different to do.
My wife is already wants to go if it's possible. She's like, hey, I want to, if they do that stuff, they want to take the kids and head out there and experience it. Cause I was down when they had the Super Bowl, I went down into those,
I did
those
too.
Things. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it was cool things. I that I'm sure I've told you the embarrassing kicks. Was I with you when we did the field goal kicking? I don't remember.
No, I want to say no.
Okay. I'm sure I've told you this story. Like, so when I was in high school, I was a soccer player. When I started playing football,
show's all about Eric.
No. this is the embarrassing part. So I started kicking footballs and stuff like that, like after high school, just playing pickup football and whatnot. Right. During college. And I used to be a pretty good kicker. And, so we come to this event and it was this pass punt thing at the NFL puts on, and I'm talking to the people that I'm with and I'm saying, look, yeah, you want to put your foot here and this is the proper way to kick. And I'm trying, I'm explaining it, and like everybody's going and they're doing great. And we're all high five and we're all excited. And then it's my turn to go.
You forgot to keep your head down.
Well, no, you're not far off, because the goalpost was on this like 1 foot metal platform. And when I went up to kick, I was like overconfident, and I went up and I tried
to the best way to do things.
I went up and I kicked that thing as hard as I could, and it never went above more than like 2 inches off the ground, hit the metal stand that was holding it, popped back up in the air, went over the whole crowd, and like almost hit a lady like who was like, you know, carrying a bag of popcorn. And oh, it was one of the more embarrassing things I think I've ever done.
You must have felt really low after that moment. It's not as bad though. I don't know. Do you feel less bad about that moment from seeing the video of the Michigan State kid between quarters when they're kicking to win the Buick? And you know, he ends up kicking and like falling over onto himself and the ball goes like a yard and a half.
Well,
at least you didn't do it in front of 70,000 people.
No, but I still wake up sometimes and remember the guy who was running the event laughing hysterically and not being able to control himself.
Yeah. You made his day.
I did. Yeah. They were giving Snickers out to all the children who participated. And he made a point to give
Snickers?
Me. He gave me two, which was almost a little bit more insulting than just.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That bruises the ego a little bit more. Treating you like a child.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was what, 16 well, that's what you years get ago
for,
now, right?
Yeah, that's what you get for being too confident and, you know, shooting your mouth off to all of your
life
friends.
Life lesson.
A lesson in humility. All right. Okay, so moving on for the 2024 draft. So that's something to look forward to. And like you point out, if the Lions don't have a first round pick in 2024, probably deflated a little bit for the fans that'll be down there.
Thursday. Oh, I'm sure they'll keep one. I'm sure it'll be lots of fun.
All right. Next order of business, we need to talk about the overtime rule.
Yeah.
There was some concern that the owners would not pass the overtime rule of both teams having a possession in overtime in the playoffs only, right? This doesn't change during the regular season, but it passed 29-3.
Yeah. So from what they had reported was that they were trying to get both teams to have a possession in overtime in this regular season as well. And some of the owners weren't going for that. And so they made a last minute concession to say, hey, what if we only put it in overtime? And essentially, it came down to numbers, right? Like they said, in the regular season, in the last decade, when it goes to overtime, whether you win the coin toss or not, half the time a team is winning, whether they win it, and half the time they're losing if they win.
I thought it was 54%.
Okay, rough. There you go.
Well, that makes it 54% of the time the team that wins the toss wins the game.
Okay. But then in overtime in the playoffs, it was more slanted. It was 10 out of 12.
10 out of the last 12, 7 in a row.
Yeah, and 7 of them had also been on the first possession as well. Not just getting the ball first, but you win it on the first possession. So
most of us remember most of those games, in fact.
Probably, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, so they make the change. Personally, I think it's a good enough change. They could have extrapolated it out over the season. But
one would argue that like now they're playing a game, they're playing two different games, which I don't know. I think that's kind of a weak argument, but the game that's played in the playoffs is now different than the game that's played in the regular season.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of a weak argument, but the rules are different.
Yeah, or you argue that, like, you know, technically the regular season games are less meaningful, right? Even though they weigh heavily into slotting for the playoffs, but yeah, the regular season games just become a little less meaningful. But look, this is an offensive league, right? And they're making this adjustment because of how successful offenses are being right now. And so I think this is their kind of way of saying, hey, we favor a lot of the regular season rules. A lot of the in-game rules favor the offense. Now this is going to be a concession that, you know, at least takes that, makes it even, I guess. And you know what I mean? Because it's so offensive heavy right now. So I'm in favor of it. I think it was the right decision. Like I said, I would have extrapolated it out over the whole season, but that's, you know, a little bit at a time. I'm comfortable with it. You haven't said if you like the decision or not.
Oh, I'm fine with it. I'd rather see both teams have possession of the ball. I'm also happy that they didn't make the rule where the team that receives the ball first, if they scored a touchdown and kicked an extra point, the other team would then have to get a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. They didn't go to that version of it. It never came up for a vote.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Well, I'm going to tangent. So if you had something to.
That's okay.
Okay. Do you not like the college rule and the college overtime and the pros? Would you be against that? I don't know if we ever discussed this before. I'm sure we have, but not in the show. Yeah.
I don't think I would like the college way. I mean, look no further than what Penn State last year, where it went to like 10 overtimes or whatever it was because no one could do anything. I would make it all the more fun,
but then the odds of players getting hurt go up. What if I gave you that hurts my argument anymore. It's like, well, what if NFL teams got the ball at the 50 instead of the 25, but you know, that would still play into your, well, what if both teams are terrible? Just sit around midfield for the next hour and a half.
I understand that. I don't know if it would work as well in the NFL. What I was going to say about this was that when you add in like the whole 2-point, when they wanted to add the 2-point conversion in, like, cause college does that, right?
Third? Now it's the third overtime is only 2-point conversion. Yeah,
only 2-point
conversion. Which I actually hate that. I'd rather see them just go for the touchdown and then be forced to go for 2-point conversions. Right. But now it just becomes like this weird shootout thing at the end, which I guess will save them a lot of time in the end.
So looking at like this overtime strategy, do you think any of those strategies will come into play? For example, if you get the ball, instead of knowing that you're going to get the ball, are you going to take the wind so that you get the ball knowing what you have to do?
It's more defensible now, especially if you have an excellent defense or the better. I don't know. You could argue any one of those situations. If you don't get the ball first, like I'm sure the options will be the same. I didn't read about that, but I assume you'll either pick whether you take the ball or you pick what goal you defend. Yeah. Right. So if there's a weather issue, I could see somebody pick to defend a specific goal. Now, when we think about all this as Lions fans, it all goes back to Marty Morningweg. The terrible decision against the Bears to kick off in overtime when Robert Porcher went running. He was a captain, but wasn't out on the field for that coin toss because it was overtime. Mm. And he went running out there to try to like correct whoever said that we wanted to kick off. And then we stopped. No, this is what we want to do. And, you know, he's puzzled, you know, going back. It's like, who would ever do that? You know, this is a player on the team. Thinking that with the coach, you know, it costs Marty Morningweg any future head coaching job.
Yeah.
But so we'll always have a bad taste in our mouth when it comes to playing defense first in overtime. But the most recent is Mike Tomlin did it, who's an excellent coach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, so it's probably not far fetched. We probably will end up seeing it. I don't know if in this year, one of the playoffs coming up, we'll see it. But I think somebody would. I think Belichick would consider that, playing defense first before getting his offense on the field to win the game at the end.
So here's the counter. If, let's say, Belichick decides to play defense first.
And they probably won't even make the playoffs this year.
But let's say he does. Okay. And let's say now you're on offense, you get the ball, you score a touchdown. Knowing that if you kick the extra point, the other team's going to get the ball with the chance to score a touchdown, kick the extra point, or go for two and get the win. Do you then go for two with the first possession and then then force their hand?
That's interesting, because that turns into the underdog take it, tying the game, or like potentially tying the game and deciding it's like, we don't want to take any more time. Let's go for two here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's in that same ballpark. So if you're a coach two schools of thought, right? So either you're the underdog and you're on the road and it's like, this is our best chance to get out of here with a win, then you go and do it. Or if you're the superior team, or you feel that you're the superior team or have the superior quarterback, yeah, well, let's go for put the pressure on them.
Let's look at KC Buffalo, because that's really what most people think was the precedence that drove this, right? Like, Kansas City gets the ball first. Kansas City probably would have went for two, right?
They weren't going to stop Mahomes. Yeah. So, yeah, that also has an effect too, like the momentum of the game.
Right. Because
if it happened in Cincinnati, you'd say Kansas City and Cincinnati are tied the next week in the AFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. If you're Andy Reid and the Chiefs and you end up scoring, it's like, maybe we'll only go for one because we're barely moving the ball in the second half as it is, you know? So, if we were playing the KC Buffalo game, you're going for two because your confidence that they're not stopping us anyways.
So I do think the double possession does create some more angles.
Other scenarios.
Yeah, then I think that we kind of
scenarios we miss more now that no onside kick works unless you're the Lions. Yeah.
Well, and then like, but that's stuff that I think that is the angle that I think they draw from the college game, is I think college teams look at that, you know,
yeah, they'll gamble about,
yeah,
more.
Right. Absolutely. And so I think, I wonder if NFL teams would do that in order to put themselves in better spots.
So big money jobs these coaches don't want to lose.
Yeah,
play it safe.
Yeah. More often than not, they tend to, that's for sure.
All right, next up, the Lions signing. So we have three of them. We're going to start with the quote-unquote big one, just because it's a return of a, depending on how you look, a beloved player, or a big-time scapegoat type player. Jared Davis played for the Jets last year, comes back. Do we have contract details on him?
Yeah, so last year the Lions wanted to retain Jared Davis, but they couldn't match the Jets number. The Jets signed him to a 1-year, $5.5 million, fully guaranteed contract. He's expected to be a big part of their offense. They're excited to have
defense.
Thank you. He was doing well. Then he gets injured. He misses a massive part of the season. Then he comes back too early and he's not playing well because he's coming back too early. And he ends up basically just like flopping out. The Jets don't want anything to do with him anymore. They're trying to move in a different direction. And so the Lions look at this as an opportunity where two waves of free agency has now passed. The prices are bottoming out on these guys. And they say, all right, we're going to offer you a deal and to try and bring you back to Detroit. Now, Davis, from what he said, he missed Detroit. This was a place that he grew up. This was a place he was comfortable, familiar. And he had a lot of, you know, introspection over the last year, and he felt this was a good decision to help him, you know, become the football player that he wants to be. So he ended up signing a deal that was very team friendly. It's a 1-year deal worth just over $1 million, 1.047 total, right? He's got a 1.03 base. And then he gets a roster bonus that kicks in. I don't know when it kicks in because I didn't have the details, but it could kick in like, it could be like if he's on the roster when training camp opens, he gets the extra $150,000. Or it could be if you make the 53-man roster, you get the other extra $150,000. But he has no guarantees. built in the contract. He got no signing bonus. So if they cut him before the roster bonus kicks in, no cap hit, no harm, no foul, away he goes. If the roster bonus kicks in and they cut him, it only costs them $150,000 in cap hits. And that's nothing in the overall picture, right? So it's a very team friendly deal with not a lot of, not a lot of hooks in it. And I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, they're going to give him an opportunity to be a role player and a situational, you know, linebacker who potentially contributes on special teams. He's got some versatility where, you know, we saw at the end of his last year in Detroit, where he was playing some time on the edge. He was, you know, he's always been a good blitzer, which is something that the Lions like to utilize. They like to blitz their linebackers, but he's not stepping into a starting role or anything like that. He's probably linebacker 3 or 4 right now. If they add another guy in the draft, that will presumably jump ahead of him on the depth chart as well. So probably currently slotted to make the roster, but there's no guarantee and there's nothing holding them back from moving on from him. And look, if they do keep him, he costs virtually nothing. It's basically like a minimum contract that you would give a UDFA or a little, just a slightly bit, a bit more. So I don't think there's a lot of downside to this. If he doesn't, if he plays like he has historically, then he won't be long for the roster. The thing that you got to remember is he was never really a good fit in Matt Patricia's scheme because he had a really hard time reading gaps. And there's going to be gap reading in this defensive scheme, but that's not primarily what they're necessarily going to do. And so they can set him up to play in his strengths. And if we've seen anything from this coaching staff, is that they know how to put guys in positions to use their strengths best. Right. And so you're hoping for a rebirth of the new Jared Davis in Detroit this year.
Yeah. Very emotional signing by the Lions. Got a lot of, I happened to be in the car driving around and listening to a certain radio show, and that really narrows it down when it comes to like being able to listen to a sports radio show in this town. And you know, they of course very had very strong opinions about it, but it's not like, well, they're not signing this guy to be next to Alex Anzalone on, you know, on first down in game one. It might end up that way with how injuries go, but they're not bringing him in to be the guy. You mentioned it. He, in his nearing the end of his career in Detroit, he was almost useful as a part-time player who rushed the passer, and hopefully that's how they use him in his return. But if they're using him on running downs, then we all got a lot to be concerned about. It's fine. He's back. It's a small contract. You know, they see if he can redeem himself. Maybe he gets a couple of segments on Hard Knocks because of it. Yeah. And that's pretty much all it is. I don't know if anybody should really look into it too deeper than that.
No. And I think that it parallels a lot of the contracts that we've seen this off season. They've Mike Disner and Brad Holmes have organized this free agency period with pretty acceptable contracts, nothing outlandish, nothing that really hamstrings them in any way. And so they've done a nice job of filling out the majority of their roster without really, you know, putting themselves in a bind financially.
All right. Now moving on to the, although we do have to mention that a little bit, like,
yeah,
a lot of fans are really upset how free agency has unfolded for the Lions. Now, I don't know if we're going to be the ones to have the best discussion on this, and that, you know, I'm not really against what they're doing, because what are they going to, they're going to go out and get Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner doesn't want to play here. They're bad. You know, a lot of these top-notch free agents, they don't want to come here. And maybe after next year, if they show some improvement, they'll be able to get some big-time free agents. Sure. But doing what they're doing now, you know, it's not unexpected. And they could be bad another year and be picking at the top of the draft in 2023. And I know not a lot of people want to hear that because they just want them to be good. But I don't know if that's the reality of the situation.
Well, we talked previously a couple podcasts ago about I talk about what my opinion was on why they were re-signing their players. And then this week at the owners' meeting, Brad Holmes talked about that as well. And he said, look, the grass isn't always greener. With these guys, we know what they're capable of. We gave a lot of these players one-year contracts, and we asked them to prove themselves, and a lot of them proved themselves, and they earned second contracts. And so now they're in a situation where they're going to have to still compete, and they're still going to have to prove it again. But like, we felt comfortable that with these players knowing the scheme, it would help us acclimate the team faster into the off season and into like the spring camp and training camp in the fall and into the season. It'll help us keep some of the, I don't want to say momentum, but some of like the positive energy they had at the end of the season. They believe a lot of those players stepped up. Like, we, again, these are some things that we talked about previously, but like Holmes, you know, reiterated that they asked these guys to do something and they did it. And then they got rewarded for it. And that's, again, that's another thing that teams will recognize. Look, if Chark even mentioned it at his signing or his presser, he said, I like the way their strategy of retaining players who earned coming back, essentially, right? And he said that was part of the appeal that drew him to the organization. And look, if Chark does well and Chark does earns another contract, well, other free agents are going to see that as well. And if the team improves, like you say, well, then you draw a larger, you know, audience of players that are interested. So I like the idea of rewarding players when they do what you expect them to do. You ask them to do it, they get rewarded. I think that's a good strategy for, you know, creating good front office player relations. Chark, he's already bought in. He's already in California, right? Like today he posted on Instagram, him and Goff, Amon-Ra St. Brown
playing on his golf hole behind Reynolds. His house.
Well, Goff has, he trains in Huntington Beach in California. And he had basically what is supposed to be your starting wide receiver trio, all out training with him in recent days. And so, you know, Chark's bought in, man. It's a good thing to see. And I think a lot of that is because of the culture. You know, Chark mentioned that before. The culture is a big deal to him. And I think they're establishing that.
All right. From one former first round draft pick in Jared Davis to another, Lions signed Mike Hughes, who was the 30th overall pick in the 2018 draft, 5'10", 186 pounds. We might remember, well, all football fans should have at least some reference to him. He used to be a Viking. Last mm-hmm. year, he was a Chief. Lions bring him in also on a one-year deal.
Yeah, so he gets a little bit more than Jared Davis. His base is 1.25, which is basically all of what Jared Davis's contract is worth. He gets a signing bonus that's a little over $500,000. He has in-game roster bonuses that can get up over $400,000. Because he played in all 17 games last year, all of the roster game bonuses are considered likely to be earned, which means they all count against the cap this year. If he is cut or if he doesn't play in all 17 games, then that money will be part of the adjustments for the Lions next year. Well, they'll end up getting that money back, right? Like, remember how we talked previously about how the adjustments were, Lions got $8-9 million in adjusted income back. Well, this is one of those situations. If he doesn't play, then they're going to get this money back. But for now, it counts against this year's cap. So his cap is going to be $2.25 million. And again, with $1 million guaranteed, it's enough to bring in a guy who is potentially going to be a starter, but not necessarily guaranteeing him anything, because he could still get cut with only $1 million guaranteed. It would be interesting to see if he ends up, like, if Akuda's not ready, if he ends up starting over like Melifonwu. Or maybe he could, you're bringing him in to compete with AJ Parker in the slot. And maybe he ends up being a guy who starts in the slot, because they really haven't addressed the slot this year beyond AJ. And so maybe Hughes challenges for that.
Is there any talk of a Spielman connection with the Hughes signing, with him being a Viking?
I don't think there. I haven't heard any. I mean, it's an interesting thought process because he would know him, but I don't know of any. Let me put it that way.
One more signing by the Lions since the last time we were out here chatting is Chris Board, former Baltimore Raven, 6'2", 229. He was a fifth-round draft pick. Wait, no. Was he a fifth-round draft pick, or was he undrafted?
No, I think he was drafted, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, either way, Raven last year, he's only started two games in his career, although rather durable.
Yeah.
He's only missed two games his entire career in his four-year career.
Yeah, and the thing that you like to see is that his defense, his playing time on defense has increased each of those years because he was getting progressively better and better and better. This was a guy that the Ravens wanted to retain, but the Lions paid him a little bit more money, gave him a little bit more opportunity, and they were able to snag him away. So not an overpay by any means. They 1.5 base, about 600,000 guaranteed. He got a 400,000 signing bonus. So that means, $1 million in guarantee. It's not going to keep him on the roster, but it's enough to entice him to come. And then he has roster game bonuses as well that could get up to $100,000. And, he's in a spot where he has probably an inside track to make the roster. But here's the thing. He'll probably make the roster because he's one of the better special teamers in the entire league, not necessarily because he's like this. He's going to win a contributing role on defense. He very much could win a contributing role on defense, but his special teams is probably going to get him on the roster. So like when you look at like Board's contract compared to Davis's contract, Board's making like twice as much as Jared Davis is. But Jared Davis may be a little bit higher on the defensive depth chart than Board. It's hard to say right now the way they're looking at these two guys. But Board is in a really good spot because, like I said, he contributes in the third phase very much like Jalen Reeves-Maben did. And I think he will basically slide right into that Reeves-Maben role.
The hope with all these moves, at least for me, is that this team builds some depth and they can handle injuries a little better, definitely better than they were able to handle them in the Patricia era, just so they could have like a full 53-man roster. Because if you look at these other teams that win Super Bowls and are in contention for championships, like it's all these other guys. They have their stars, but you know that those 46 guys they put in uniform, like they're all useful and they're all playing. And yeah, some of them, you know, you're going to, Eli Apple's going to make mistakes, but for the most part, you have like a roster of guys who can handle almost every situation. And I see that's what the Lions are going after here. And I just hope they get there. That's the big one.
Yeah. You know, look, their roster is almost maxed out. They've got, like 79 players, I think. Let me double check. They got 79 players signed and then they have 9 draft picks, which would put them at 88 of their 90 man roster. And so, they're close to maxed out but you know, they're going to add 9 draft picks. They're going to add undrafted guys. People are going to drop off the bottom. And ideally you end up with a team that has 53 players that can definitely all contribute, because this is a league where the Lions needed 90 players last year because of all the injuries and whatnot. And so, you know, you might need this many in order to get through a regular season. And so it's nice to have as much depth as you can.
All right, we'll wrap up. Let's flip over to the draft.
Yeah.
The Pride of Detroit, your employer, has a little community mock draft series they do, and in the most recent one you angered many people out there with your selection at number 2. Well, first, wait, you know what, before we get to that, mm-hmm. there have been talks. Brad Holmes has been fielding phone calls about the number 2 pick. He says he's talked to a couple teams. Is that a smokescreen, Eric? Has he really not talked to anybody? He's saying that just so maybe he entices a couple of more teams to give him a call.
Yeah, who knows, right? I think absolutely could be a smokescreen, but or he could have talked to somebody too. It's It's really hard to say. Historically, this front office and coaching staff have been pretty straightforward. So you kind of want to take him at his word, but he could also be using the fact that he's pretty honest in general to throw a lie out there to entice other teams. So it's really hard to tell. It is lying season. And so who knows? I suspect he's had some people inquire. I don't think he's necessarily had an offer or anything like that. But he said he was expecting to get more conversations going. And, there's a lot of teams in the league that believe the top of the draft, the tackles at the top of the draft are the ones that are worth trading up for, not necessarily the edge rushers. And so if you're a team that needs an offensive tackle, you could see somebody trying to jump, Houston or the Jets or the Giants or whoever. Right. And so like, there's some teams that need tackles and we will see who is interested in popping up. I still don't think the Lions are in a great spot to trade.
Only the Lions could number two overall draft pick have any suitors to trade up for.
Well, I mean, look a couple of years ago, they had the number three and no suitors. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's the Lions.
That was the Tua year, right? Where everyone wanted them to trade out.
You would think that somebody would trade up to get Tua or to trade up to get Justin Herbert. Like now when you look back, it's like, well, they should be trading up to get Herbert instead of Tua.
But neither of those teams believed anyone would trade up, and no one did. And not a trade offer was not even offered, right? There was not a single trade offer even put out there to the Lions.
That's probably what's going to happen again this year.
It very well could, because look, Houston has so many needs and they could go so many different ways. I could argue Houston could take a right tackle. They could definitely use a right tackle. They could also use an edge rusher. They could, you know what I mean? Like, so they can go either way. I don't think and I don't know if somebody's like, well, we got to get ahead of Houston because, I don't know. I don't know if how great of a spot they're in.
Plus, well, go ahead. All right. You finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say, and no one really knows even what's going to happen necessarily. Like even at the top right now, it went from Jacksonville wanted a tackle. Then they wanted Hutchinson. Now they're talking about wanting a different guy potentially who we'll get to in a second. So this is a lot of unknowns here at the top. So I don't know if anybody's necessarily, I think people are putting feelers out, but not necessarily super anxious to try and move up.
Yeah. And I also think that with the Lions fan base, which is a rather divided fan base, as we've discussed many times.
Oh, yeah.
This is one thing they agree on. I think everybody wants them to trade down from number two. And that's probably the number one reason why it won't happen. It's because everybody wants it to happen because everybody kind of feels that, especially now that Hutchinson looks like he's going to be number one, that could change, like you said. But the way it looks right now, he's number one. Everybody's like, well, you don't want number two. Let's move down. Let's get some more picks for this number two overall pick. And it's usually an indicator. Well, if that's what you all want, that's not going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. All of the players at the top have flaws, right? Every one of them.
Yeah. But one or two of them is going to be an all pro.
Certainly.
What happens with the NFL play. They have to just pick the right one. And do they know who the right one is?
And I think this year's class has more flaws than I think
than any class since 2009 when Stafford was drafted. That was a bad draft class.
No, we've seen some other bad draft classes too.
Well, I don't know, but that one was like really because remember how many people hated the fact that they drafted Stafford. They didn't like Stafford. Now you look back and it's like, yeah, he was the right. He was the only pick that panned out in the top like 15.
Well, look at the Ziggy year. That year was horrendous.
Yeah, like that was a bad draft. And here are the Lions. Once again, Lions are at the top of the draft.
But look, you can look at all of these top picks and you can nitpick all the things that are wrong with them. But realistically, I think you have to find the right guy that fits the mentality, that fits the attitude, that fits what they're trying to accomplish. Right. And I think there's some guys that fit in there and some guys that don't. And there's a whole bunch of factors that go into play. So look, yeah, the Pride of Detroit's doing this community mock draft, and they, the first subscriber was Aiden Hutchinson. The drafter picked Aiden Hutchinson. Okay. And so then that left me with the choice of who to go with next.
The unenviable task of picking two.
I think if Hutchinson was there, it would have been an easy choice for me. I would have picked Hutchinson, and then I think everybody would have been like, okay, fine. And instead, I went with Trayvon Walker. And of the people who read the article and voted in the poll, over half of them gave it an A grade, and then like another 30% or whatever gave it like a B, and then the last 20% gave it D's, C's, or F's. And you know, the most vocal people that told me that they didn't like it seemed to be the ones that gave me the lower grades. So
no way.
I spent most
never would have expected it.
So I spent most of my day Tuesday trying to explain my reasoning. But you know, here's what it is. Here's the bottom line. I put something out on Twitter that said, look, when people talk about effort issues with Kayvon Thibodeau, this is the visual. No one had put in a visual. Everyone just said, there is an effort issue. There's an effort. So I just was like, all right, I'll put one example out. Not all of them, just one. I'm like, this is an example of like what they're talking about. And I even said, I think it's being blown out of proportion, but this is what I think people are referring to. And there's more examples of what I put out there. There's also other elements to it that talk about like when he's doing different pass rush moves, and if he gets stunted, how he doesn't necessarily drive into a secondary pass rush move. Regardless, I'm not trying anyway. I mentioned some negative things about him, and then I got labeled like a Thibodeau hater, and that's not the case.
Local shock gas bag, Eric Schlitt.
It's not the case. When I watched him the first time through, I was so enamored with his athleticism that I think I overlooked some of the other details. When I watched him a second time through, I started finding details and things that I didn't like necessarily as much. And that happens like all the time. And it just so happens that I found some with Thibodeau, and there's a large fan base that really thinks he's the pick and really wants him to be there. And I've been catching a lot of flack for that, and that's fine. I trust my eyes. You know me, man, I've been doing this for almost 20 years now. I trust myself and my judgment, and I'm willing to own what I say. So there's some aspects of this game that I don't necessarily like. There's some parts of his game that I don't necessarily think fit the Lions. For example, he has talked about the fact that he thinks he would be more successful in a 3-4, not necessarily. And then the Lions have come out and said they want to go to more 4-3. Now there's still going to be some hybrid stuff going on, but like, look, if your base is going to be I just found it interesting that he's like, hey, I like 3-4. And then the Lions are like, oh, we're going to a 4-3. And they don't always match. Right. And then you talk about like, when you look at, you know, how he attacks, it's so appealing. Like, and you can see how that would fit into the Lions scheme, and he's a good run defender. But while he's a good run defender, he's not a very good edge setter. And that's an important aspect of playing defensive end in this scheme. And if you can't set the edge, then it's a problem. And I think he struggles with that. And is it fixable? Sure. Because it's fixable, but it's a hard skill to teach. I think it gets overlooked, because when people think edge rushers, that they think, get to the passer and that's all that matters. Well, it's not. That's not all that matters, unfortunately. You can't judge a defensive end on sacks alone. You can't judge defensive end on pass rush alone. There's so many other factors that go into playing that position that you have to be able to look at the entire picture. Would it be nice to have a guy who could set the edge and rush the passer? Certainly, right? That's the ideal, but that's not all. You don't always find a complete package that has that combination. And I think that it's a part that's lacking in Thibodeau's game, which is why I have Trayvon Walker ahead of Thibodeau on my board, because Trayvon Walker, he can set the edge. He is labeled an edge rusher, but he's really not an edge rusher as much as he's a defensive lineman, right? And so when you compare him to Aiden Hutchinson and Thibodeau, it's not an apples to apples conversation. It's you're comparing guys that do things a little bit differently, right? Thibodeau is more of a straight line, aggressive, get up the field, get to the passer type of player. Hutchinson, he plays a little bit differently. He's trying to power. He's will stop the run on his way to the quarterback, but he's still trying to get to that quarterback. Whereas Walker, in George's scheme, it was more two gap oriented, and he was asked to occupy blocks, or he was asked to push inside when Jordan Davis needed to come off the field, because that's a lot of what happened. Jordan Davis would leave the field. Thibodeau would shift. Or I'm sorry. Walker would shift inside, and then they would bring another defensive end on to take over Walker's spot, because that was how they tried to keep they were trying to create pressure differently. Right. So you saw Walker push inside, you saw him outside, you saw him stand up, you saw him drop, you saw him move forward. Like, he did all these different things. And while the pass rushing part of his game is the part that's not polished, he does so many other things so well that I think it's just going to be too appealing. And then when you add in the fact that he's super athletic and he has all of these traits, you can teach him how to create different secondary moves. You can teach him how to be a better pass rusher than you know, just trying to bull rush every single time. And I think that's the trick, is if you're looking at the two prospects, what's easier to teach? Is it easier to teach a defensive end how to settle and set the edge with power? Or is it easier to teach them a secondary pass rushing move? And in my opinion, I think you can take a super athletic guy and teach him a secondary pass rushing move a lot easier than you can take an athlete and teach him how to anchor and set a hard edge and stay disciplined. And so to me, Walker is, he is more complete. He has some flaws, but he is the type of player that you can put into the system. He can play at multiple spots and he's teachable. He has an incredibly high work ethic, and yeah, he doesn't have the stat production, but that's not surprising considering the different roles that he played at Georgia. So I like Walker a ton. And I think Thibodeau is going to be a great player, but I don't think he's the right fit necessarily with Detroit. And look, Walker, to me, the potential is equally as high. And I know people want, but he's not as good of a pass rusher right now as Thibodeau is. And I know that's what people want. People want that flashy bend off the edge guy, but I don't think that's what this coaching staff necessarily wants to have. And because of that, that's why I have Walker as the higher pick. Now, there's one more name I want to throw in this mix, and that's Jermaine Johnson. The Florida State kid. Now he transferred to Florida State because he wasn't getting playing time at Georgia because he was too far back onto the depth chart. He goes from a two gapping scheme where he was asked to play an edge role to now a one gapping scheme where he's able to attack. And sure enough, his stats went up and they accelerated, but that's not surprising. When you take a player and you take them out of a two gapping system and you allow them to attack, that those results typically come. And we could potentially see the same thing with Walker this year if he gets shifted out from a two gapping scheme. Now, I don't know if Johnson is quite at the level of like Thibodeau and Walker right now. I still have him four. But I think he's a guy that Dave Burkett put into his mock draft at two. So he's a guy that I think is in the conversation. But if I'm ranking the edge rushers today, I have Hutchinson, Walker, Thibodeau, and then Johnson for me. And I think it's a very clear 1, 2, 3, 4. And I do think that there are going to be teams that have Hutchinson first, and then there are going to be some teams that will have Walker first. And maybe there's teams that have Thibodeau first too. I don't want to discount that, because there's going to be teams that are going to be looking for what he does. But I think Jacksonville, while it looks like they're going for Aiden Hutchinson, they might have Walker first. It's hard to say. There's a lot of smoke around that right now. But I do think for the Lions, Hutchinson and Walker make more sense right now. And if they stay at two, whichever one goes first, I think the Lions could end up getting the other one.
All right. Very, very in-depth, big-time breakdown. It's interesting seeing Trayvon Walker's name now ascending to the top of the draft list.
Well, look. No, I'm sorry.
No, I know I'm not, I shouldn't be stats driven, but I do like look for little keys. Like, sure. You talk about Jermaine Johnson, and you look at, you know, he had 12 sacks this year, but he's got three of them, you know, against Jacksonville State. You know, he's got them against some cheap opponents. Trayvon Walker's interesting. He only has six sacks, but they're in some big games: Clemson, Auburn, Michigan, Alabama. Like, when he went after the passer, they're really important games, and kind of backs up your thought process. It is what it is, that they play a two gapping scheme in Georgia compared to Jermaine Johnson being allowed to tee off in Florida State more often. I don't know. It's going to be interesting as we get closer to the draft and how these guys continue to move as we get there. If there's any others that aren't already at the top of the list, they're going to make their way up there. One player that's not going to make his way up there is David Ojabo, who tore his Achilles.
Yeah.
We talked about him a couple of weeks ago when it came to, hey, should the Lions draft him?
Yeah.
Like with pick 66?
Yeah, we talked about 66 and 99 or 97. And we said, hey, is he worth that?
And now there's another guy that gets added to that list, and Damone Clark. Although we were seeing Damone Clark more as you know, maybe a guy, if he and Ojabo were both healthy, he's a guy that'd be taken after Ojabo. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. He was a guy who I think some local writers, myself included, looked at him as a potentially a guy at pick 34. A little bit more nationally, I think he was a little bit lower on some of the other top analysts like draft boards and whatnot, but he had a spinal fusion, right? Which is
not great.
Yeah. And look, we're not doctors and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. But you know, they say he's expected to have a full recovery. And so we have to base our analysis off of that. Do we think he's going to have a full recovery? And obviously, if there's complications, or if you're not if the doctors aren't happy with something or whatever, then he doesn't become draftable. But if he is a player who is going to return to full health, and he is probably just going to miss the year, then, you know, how far can he fall before, you know, you say, I want to stop that slide? And so for me, I think, like with Ojabo, you can expect him to drop like 50 to 60 picks, maybe even drops 100. Right. But the thing is if he does drop, you know, into like the fourth round, which is kind of what I'm anticipating, Lions don't pick in the fourth round. So I proposed a scenario, and I want to see if you are interested in this scenario, if you would buy this scenario or sell this scenario, Joe. I think if Clark, from a physical standpoint, is expected to recover and be available in 2023, and he's there in the fourth round, would you be okay with them doing what they did to acquire Derek Barnes last year, which is give up a fifth and a fourth next year in order to move up into the fourth round this year in order to acquire him, knowing he won't play for a season? So essentially you'd be giving up a fifth rounder and then a fourth rounder. Now last year in the deal, they got a fourth and a seventh. So, you can throw that seventh in there too, if you want, but I think if they took that Derek Barnes strategy gave up a fifth and a future fourth to go up and get him in the, to get Damone Clark. That was something that I proposed that I would be interested in doing. Do you buy that or you sell that?
Yeah, I'll buy that. If they like him that much, yeah. And if he would be that, if they have a strong feeling of what of that would, he would be a difference maker down the road, yeah, you'd make that move.
Yeah, look, I think he could be a starter in this league. I think losing a year isn't the end of the world. With Ajabo, we had said no because we didn't want to give up a third-round pick. Here, giving up a fourth is a little bit more palatable. Once you get into those fifth-round picks, fifth round and beyond, they're all gambles, right? I don't care about losing a fifth round pick in order to get a guy that you think could do something for your team, right? And so that was my thought process. That was what I was interested in. He's a good enough player. He's got connections to the team. I think he'd be worth it. If he slid down to 177, even better. I think they could take him there, but I feel bad for Clark. And again, obviously spinal fusion is nothing to mess around with. It's possible he falls out of the draft entirely, but yeah, he's a player I like and a player I'd be interested in still drafting a little bit later.
Breaking news. Uh-oh. That doesn't really affect the podcast much, but Bruce Arians has stepped down as head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So now Everybody knows when we were recording the show, Todd Bowles will take over. So this definitely has the feel of Tom Brady squeezed him out. Probably wasn't happy about the things he said with his retirement and time to get Arians out of there.
Arians was pushing for him to be back. And like, even at the owners meetings, he was gushing over because Arians was at the owners meetings as the coach. So, I took the head coach pitcher and everything. So I'm surprised a day after the conclusion of that he's
maybe he was fighting to, because the GM told Brady that, well, he said that he's the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or he's going to belong to the Buccaneers. And I think Arians said, I don't know. This has to me, and I could be totally wrong, and we'll find out that this has a lot of Tom Brady kind of forced this to happen. Fingerprints all over it. Why would he do this now? You know,
it does seem very odd.
Unless there's a family reason or a personal reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Very interesting. I'm surprised by that because he seemed all gung ho to go.
Yeah. And you're kind of passing up, like, they might not, they're a Super Bowl contender and they're legitimately, it's not like they're a dark horse or a Super Bowl contender. Like, they are one of the Super Bowl contenders. Why would you just walk away from that? It's interesting.
Todd Bowles is no slouch.
He'll be fine. The team's really good. So I this is a great situation for him to step into. That's for sure.
Certainly.
All right. One last note. Penn State had their pro day. Lions safety coach. He showed up for it.
Brian Duker. Duker was at Penn State safety. The Lions safety coach Duker was at Penn State's pro day
to see Jaquan Brisker in all likelihood, and
that's what you
all
think,
the other
right?
Penn State guys.
So yeah, so Aaron Glenn got eyes on Daxton Hill. Duker got eyes on Brisker. The linebackers were at Georgia's pro day, but they also had a scout that was very—you could tell on the SEC network—was eyeballing scene. Baylor hasn't had their pro day yet, so we're not sure what'll happen there. I don't know if they sent anyone to Notre Dame for Hamilton. I assume they did, but I haven't checked. I was really busy with the owners meeting stuff. But there's a few pro days here. Like, Lions have been doing their due diligence, right? Brisker was, I think, the guy that, you know, Duker went to see. Brunell has been the guy to go to all of the top quarterback pro days. He was at Pickett's, and then he was not able to go to Willis's, but they know Willis quite a bit. They sent one of their top guys to Willis's anyways, and then he was at Corral's, and then he was at Ritter's, and then he was at Howell's as well. Brunell was. And so look, they're doing a lot of due diligence on a lot of these different guys. I don't think there's a lot to be, I don't think you need to be overly analytical about who goes where, but it is interesting.
No, yeah, I would agree with that statement.
Yeah, but it is interesting when position coaches go to a spot where there's a player that you know makes a lot of sense for them, like with Brisker, like with the Georgia linebackers. Holmes was at Michigan to see Hutchinson, but Spielman was at Georgia to see the Georgia linebackers and Walker, and then I expect them to send a big guy to Thibodeau's. Holmes was the guy who went to see Thibodeau when they played UCLA, when the Lions were in LA for the Rams game. He got eyes on them there. So we'll see what happens, who they send to that. But who knows? Like, I think it's not anything to get worked up over because they didn't go to Malik Willis's pro day. I don't think it's anything to get super amped up because Holmes went to Michigan. You know what I mean? Like with the big guys, they're getting so much information. I don't think you need to read into that too much. When the position coaches go, it's a little bit easier to kind of pick up on who they're identifying. But look, by the time this pro day season ends, they're going to have seen pretty much like 600 different guys. You know what I mean? So don't get too caught up in it. I guess that's my message I'm trying to send here is there's some interesting connections, but they meet and talk with a lot of these guys.
At the same time, you think about it yourself when it comes to your own work and you have to end up traveling and you have a department and you have other people who do your job. And it's like, well, this guy's going to be closer. This guy's got time here, so he's going to go there. He and the family are already going to be on vacation in, upstate New York. So I might as well have him hit Penn State on the way back or whatever. Those things can always play into it too.
For sure. Yeah. Like when they make these schedules, they're not going to send a guy to the East Coast and then send them to the West Coast the next day and then back to the East Coast, right? It's not realistic. And so, look, they get all the pro day tape. They get all the and the Rams were notorious for this, for not even going to pro days and just getting the tape sent to them and then just analyzing it on the video. Personally, I think there's an advantage to going, but I don't think it's the end all be all by any means.
Yeah. All right. So that, I'm looking at our list. That's all the topics we had to run down. We did pretty good today.
Nice.
We're up to 407 rankings. I should actually come up with a name for you. And that was actually what I was looking for.
Doral Gray.
Well, thank you, Doral Gray, for the very positive review. We appreciate it. And I don't know, but rather slow week for the Lions in their personnel decisions, but a big week for the Lions when it comes to their NFL visibility, which could end up being a terrible thing or could end up being all right.
Hey, can I tell you, I haven't told you this off air, but I was on the UK podcast Roar of the Lions on Monday. I was on there. They do a Twitch and a YouTube and turn it into a podcast. They do a nice job. I had a lot of fun talking to those guys. They're very big fans of Joe Kania. I mean, very big fans of Joe Kania. They had a lot of nice things to say about you, Joe. They're big fans of the show as well, and a bunch of good guys. So when you get done listening to our podcast, I think it'd be a good idea to download Roar of the Lions. That's a British podcast, and they do a real nice job.
Well, that's great. It's great. It's very odd that there are folks in the UK that like to hear us talk about the Lions, but also very cool. And we're very appreciative of them. And yeah, and that I've been seeing that you were on their show and I've been meaning to listen to it. It's been a rather busy week, but I'll definitely get to it.
Yeah. They're fans. They enjoy your opinion very much. And, I think like most of our reviewers that we get here on our shows, they enjoy our, the dynamic and the approach that we have. And so hopefully we'll keep delivering for everybody. And, man, we're getting we're getting near the end of this thing here where we're getting real close to the draft. We're going to have to start going and breaking up these position groups and really kind of digging into some players a little bit heavier. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're in crunch time. Yeah, like just a few weeks away. Yeah. And that's all we got for today. But once again, thanks everybody out there for listening. And until next time, let's go Lions.